Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Happy Wednesday, football fans, and welcome in to another edition of the Pro Football Chase Podcast. I'm Isaac Sines, and I thank you for joining me. In today's episode, NFL defensive tackle Jarrell Worthy and I break down the blockbuster trade that sent Jalen Ramsey to Los Angeles. We also recap Week 6 and preview Week 7's matchups. Plus, we'll debate trending topics including the Chiefs and Rams struggles and what's next for Marcus Mariota and the Titans. This is the Pro Football Chase Podcast, a podcast that has featured interviews with Rams wide receiver Robert Woods.
3,000 yards, and you know, last year, unfortunately, I got hurt midway in the season, but other than that, just working and grinding to get to this point, and finally broke it with a lot of games left.
Packers wide receiver Marquez Valdez-Scantling.
Just the fact that we got a, you know, all pro on the other side of the ball, you know, in Devontae. So when you got a guy like that, you know, that's just going to get the main focus. Obviously, you know, people start to know my name a little bit after I made a few plays here and there.
Broncos offensive guard Ronald Leary.
It would either have to be a counter or pin and pull play when we get on the edge and run. I think it's always impressive when big guys can get out that stance and move and hit somebody. So,
in rising stars, Dalton Risner, Charles Amenahu, and Jawan Williams. This is a podcast that offers player perspectives from some well-decorated veterans, including T.J. Houshmandzadeh.
And people will say, oh, well, is Dak Prescott a franchise quarterback? Look at his record. It tells you he is. Oh, he has a great defense. He has Ezekiel Elliott. You tell me a quarterback in the entire NFL that's not Tom Brady that does more with less.
Game previews, recaps, and analysis. Turn the volume up. The chase is on, and the chase is live. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome into the Pro Football Chase Podcast. It's Isaac Sines with you, and joining me is my co-host, NFL defensive tackle Jarrell Worthy. We're ready to talk some more football. We got plenty to get into with big trades that happened yesterday afternoon on top of previewing Week 7's matchup. So, Jarrell, how are you doing today, brother?
Man, I'm doing phenomenal this morning. I'm excited to get right into it to talk about everything that's been taking place around the NFL, man. It's been some exciting storylines, man. So we should just jump right into it, man.
All right, bro. So on that note, this week we're going to bring back the Players of the Week. We didn't do it last week because we subbed out. We had Brandon Graham on the show. So again, big thank you to him. I'll go ahead and get things started, Jarrell. On offense, my Player of the Week, and it's ironic, I'm going with Jets quarterback Sam Darnold because he beat the Dallas Cowboys, which is my favorite team, and it was not very pleasing for me to watch him shred the Dallas defense in the way he did. The guy had not played the previous 3 weeks due to mono. He comes back. The Cowboys had no answers for him. The former number 3 overall pick carved up Dallas, going 23 for 32 with a 113.8 passer rating, 338 yards, 2 touchdowns. He also connected with Robbie Anderson on a 92-yard score before the half. So this guy came out slinging. He brought some juice to the Jets offense. And so for that, he is my offensive player of the week.
Nice, man. I think he had a phenomenal week last week. I know, you know, it was an emotional 3 days for you, man. 72 hours have passed. It's been emotional for you. You know, you guys have a chance to redeem yourself with the Eagles coming up this week, man. But, I mean, it's going to be a tough sledding for you guys, man, if you guys don't pick it up. But my offensive player of the week, I will have to give it to a guy who was in Kansas City for a short period of time, was released or traded from Kansas City. Carlos Hyde, in his return with the Houston Texans, 26 carries, 126 yards, 4.5 yards per carry. Week after week, it's starting to be proven the formula to beat the Chiefs. And, you know, which is basically time possession. If you can average over five yards per carry against this team and keep the guys off the, and keep Patrick Mahomes off the field, then you have an opportunity to win. And I think that, you know, with his 26 carries along with whatever what Deshaun Watson was able to do this past weekend, you have to tip your hat to Carlos Hyde and going into Kansas City getting the win.
Yeah, and I'm pretty happy to see Carlos Hyde getting some success after a roller coaster type career. We all know he's a tough runner, and so it didn't work out with the Chiefs, and the Texans pulled the trigger, acquired him before the regular season, and he's found immense success running behind that revamped Texans offensive line. So Carlos Hyde's running well for Houston, so I'm glad that he's finding his niche there in Texas. So now defensive player of the week, Jarrell. I'm going with the player that I'm almost certain 95% of NFL fans have no idea who he is yet. And an emphasis on the yet, because this guy can flat out play. We'll see him take the field on Thursday night primetime. It's Broncos inside linebacker Alexander Johnson. Johnson recorded 9 total tackles, 6 solo, 1.5 tackles for loss, 2 quarterback hits, 1.5 sacks during Sunday's dominant victory over the Tennessee Titans. And to give you a little bit of a background on him, Jarrell, and those who are listening, he was indicted in February of 2015, he along with a Tennessee teammate, because he played for the Volunteers, on an aggravated rape allegation, and he spent more than 3 years out of football because of it. However, all the charges were acquitted in July of 2018, so the Broncos signed him a few weeks later. This is a guy that was a complete stud in college, and had that off-the-field issue not come up, he would have been a day two pick easily, second, third, fourth round pick. And so he jumped Corey Nelson for the starting role and Josie Jewell there in Denver. He showed out last week as well, got the game ball, picked off Phillip Rivers in the end zone. So he is my defensive player of the week, and I cannot wait to watch him play on Thursday.
Man, it's definitely an exciting story to see a guy come back from such an horrific story, and you know, to basically see that he's living a new life now and having an opportunity basically to prove himself. And he's been playing outstanding. The Broncos have a real good shot to get back into this division with the wins that they've had over the last couple weeks. But I think my defensive player of the week, I would have to give it to a guy against another former team of his, Gerald McCoy. His 2.5 sacks against his former team this past weekend, with 7 total sacks coming from the Carolina Panthers, as well as 7 turnovers. To be able to go out there to London against your former team, you've had an opportunity, the first chance, and you lost at home. To be able to redeem yourself and go out there and for that defense to put on that type of display, and for him to be at the head of that was very was phenomenal to watch so early in the morning. And so Gerald McCoy would be my defensive player of the week this week.
Yeah, Gerald McCoy getting a little bit of that revenge on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It didn't work out for him the first time as both teams met in week 2, as the Tampa Bay Bucs won that game. But playing in London, it's a Panthers team that's playing a very good football with Kyle Allen. But now let's go ahead and change gears and get into the big headline topic that sent the NFL world buzzing on Tuesday afternoon. And it was a trade that the Rams made. Now, of course, before they pulled the trigger on this mega deal to acquire Jalen Ramsey, they shipped out Marcus Peters to the Baltimore Ravens. They got Kenny Young in exchange, a linebacker, 24 years old, played his college ball at UCLA. He's been a reserve player for Baltimore. They also acquired draft compensation, a 5th-round pick. And then they also helped their offensive line because they acquired Austin Corbett from the Cleveland Browns for an undisclosed 2021 draft pick. But the big one came after Jarrell, Jalen Ramsey, and the price was not cheap as they sent the Jaguars first round picks in 2020 and 2021, as well as a fourth round pick in 2021. So what are your thoughts on this deal, and did the Rams overpay for Jalen Ramsey?
No, I don't think you overpay for Jalen Ramsey. I mean, he's been at the top of the game as far as elite cornerback play since he's entered into the league. He's had numerous opportunities in order to be successful in Jacksonville, that the relationships didn't work out. But I think both sides won here. You know, obviously Jacksonville, you know, they got the price that they wanted for a phenomenal player and Jalen Ramsey. And when you have a guy like Jalen Ramsey going to a defense that's been in need as far as the secondary play is going, then I think both teams have a great chance to come out on the winning side of this. You know, Jalen Ramsey comes in with an attitude in which he's hardworking. He's been at the top of the league as far as pass deflections, interceptions. He's one of the few corners that you can. You can complete a pass against. He's definitely elite in what he does. And so, when you come in and have that attitude to a team that's been struggling, you have Talib, the scoring run, injury reserve. You have Marcus Peters, who's been horrific this year, and you have a guy like that moving out your locker room. You have an opportunity, man, to be successful now. And so, you know, hopefully Marcus Peters has an opportunity to come in with a Baltimore defense that needs help as well. And he can come into a culture to where he can be successful. And, you know, Jalen Ramsey has an opportunity to do the same when it comes to the Rams. So I think all sides on all platforms had an opportunity to win in this trade.
I definitely think the Jaguars, they maximized their value. And kudos to them and Tom Coughlin as they really waited and pushed off a trade until the Rams came calling with some desperation. The Rams have lost 3 straight games, allowing the second highest total QBR during that span. You know, their defense has been struggling. They ranked 12th in total defense, 14th in pass defense through 6 weeks of play. Now, you talked about Jalen Ramsey. The guy clearly is established. I say he's a top 3 corner. I still think Stephon Gilmore is the best corner in NFL. And then Chris Harris Jr. and Patrick Peterson have something to say about that as well. So I wouldn't quite catapult Ramsey into the 1 or 2 range, but he definitely has put out some positive things on his resume. According to NFL Next Gen Stats, Jarrell, Ramsey has the 4th lowest completion percentage allowed as the nearest defender since his rookie year in 2016. He has 9 interceptions and 45 pass breakups in his 3+ seasons. Now, here's my concern. I do believe that the Rams overpaid for Jalen Ramsey, giving up first-round draft picks in 2020 and 2021, Jarrell, because I don't know if you saw this, but assuming LA does not trade back into the first round, they will not have had a first round pick in 5 straight years. 2017, they moved up to get Jared Goff. They sent that 2017 pick to Tennessee. 2018, they traded their first rounder for Brandon Cooks. 2019, they traded down with Atlanta. And now they're going to be without a first round pick for the next 2 years. And here's my issue. Jalen Ramsey's in the final year of his deal. He's got his 5th-year option in 2020 worth $13.7 million. And then he becomes a free agent in 2021. And you look at the Rams' cap space, Jarrell. They currently have $3.349 million in cap, which is the 6th lowest in the NFL. Now, don't get me wrong. I know the cap space increases each year. But assuming they pay Ramsey a lucrative deal worth at least $17 million per year, more than 70% of their cap's going to be tied to 5 players: Jared Goff, Todd Gurley, Donald, Cooks, and Jalen Ramsey, without any other money to provide depth on their team, which is what they're suffering from already on the offense and defensive line. So I think this can be a train wreck down the road, Jarrell. I know it's a big acquisition for now and in the present, but looking at what LA has done, they could really put themselves in jeopardy as far as building this team and making them competitive in the long term.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. I think they're putting all their chips at the table now. They realize the window that they have and the opportunity that they have now with this team. When you look at the table, man, you know, Talib is getting older. Obviously, you shipped out Marcus Peters. He wasn't having a phenomenal year. Clay Matthews was having a redemption style type of season with the success that he's had so far on the season. You have his jaw wired shut. You have Eric Weddle back there. They basically pushed all their chips into the table. They've realized how close they were last year. They realize that they have opportunities now this year in order to be successful. McVay is pushing all his chips into the table. And I think, I think for the short term, obviously it's gonna have an opportunity to work out, but this defense has to come around. And when you list those five guys, when you're talking about the 70% that those guys are mixed into with the cap space, with Todd Gurley not performing as well this year, and Brandon Cooks not necessarily having that Pro Bowl year, and Robert Woods, starting really emerging as the 1-2. Guy for this team, along with Cooper Kupp, man. I mean, those two guys out of that group of five would be the ones that would be expendable if I had to say so myself. And so, if you're a general manager looking at all of that type of stuff, I think you would have to take everything into account. Those guys are selling out now, and hopefully it doesn't bite them in the tail down the road. But I think that the Rams will still have a chance to get back in it, but they definitely need some help.
But even at that, Jarrell, I mean, the acquisition of Jalen Ramsey doesn't solve their main issues. Their main issues up to this point in their three-game losing streak has been the play of the interior of their offensive line due to injuries, and it got worse for them. They lost Joe Noteboom for the season with a torn ACL and MCL. But look, let's go back to this past offseason. They couldn't pay Roger Saffold. They couldn't pay John Sullivan, the veteran center. So now they have an interior starting lineup that consists of Jamil Demby, Brian Allen at center, and now Austin Blythe at right guard. And their best offensive line right now is left tackle Andrew Whitworth, who contemplated retirement before this season and could retire after the year. So then now if you're the Rams, you don't have draft capital. You're not going to have money to go and find yourself a tackle to replace him. Now they still have Rob Havenstein on the right side. But there's issues there in the interior. And then the defense, man, it's not just the secondary. Their linebackers have struggled getting off blocks, making plays. So I understand the magnitude of Jalen Ramsey and what he can bring to a defense. And Wade Phillips, I'm sure, is going to put him to great use with his schemes and one-on-one coverage. But I just don't even know if this trade's going to help the most glaring issues on the Rams football team right now, which is what makes this trade a little bit more concerning for me than it may be for others.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ifs ands when you discuss the entirety of the whole team. But I've been in situations like that before where the injury bug is bitten. You know, you have to find players in order that can compete and go out there and win. And sometimes, the young guys that you have to plug in and play, man, they have to really grow up and gain traction each and every week. And so, guys like Brian Allen, I've had opportunity to be around him in Michigan State. I know that he's a hard worker, and each and every week he's gonna gain traction to be able to have success within their offense. And so I just think that it's really more so for me, it's their running game. Ty Gurley is the most important piece to their offense, and if they don't have an opportunity to get him running, I don't necessarily see them having any success. I think their passing game is elite, but to have that same success that they had a couple years ago going into going deep into the playoffs and as well as the Super Bowl, they have to have that running game as well as that play action attack in order for them to be able to compete. This defense is built for them to have a lead. I mean, they have great pass rushers. They're built to be able to get upfield and wreak havoc and basically sit and watch quarterbacks make decisions and make, terrible decisions. And that's how they're built. They're not necessarily built to be in close games. So they need Todd Gurley and this offensive line to be able to return to elite status.
Well, we'll see how that trade plays out for the Rams as they look to snap their three-game losing streak here in week number 7. But we're going to go ahead and segue to the next topic. And the topic is, which team is in more trouble following their week 6 loss? Is it the Rams, who are 3-3, the Cowboys, who are 3-3 and just dropped a loss to the previously winless New York Jets? Or is it the Chiefs, who are 4-2? Now, here's a crazy stat, Jarrell. The Chiefs, who started 4-0, the Rams started 3-0, the Cowboys started 3-0, and all three of those teams are a combined 0-8 since their undefeated starts. So with that, I turn to you, Jarrell. Which team of these three do you think is in the most trouble moving forward?
When I say out of this three, I would say it'd have to be the Rams, solely on a few occasions, on a few reasons. You know, the departure of Marcus Peters, you know, obviously he hasn't been playing up to par like he was a year ago, affects this defense. Obviously, Jalen Ramsey comes in, is going to try to help solidify one half of the field when it comes to just, they're not really necessarily going to ask him to do a lot of things. Cover the best receiver, lock him down, you go wherever he goes, and then we'll figure out the rest coverage-wise until he gets up to speed. But the missing of Clay Matthews for the next 6 to 8 weeks with the broken jaw, with him having 6 sacks on the year, top on his team as far as defensive pressure, they're going to miss that. Aaron Donald hasn't really been having the same effect that he's had in previous years, and he's really kind of hindering his team, where teams can scheme against him being aggressive upfield now, to where it kind of opens the hole up a lot in the middle. So this team has to improve their running game as well as in the secondary, and that they have to improve. But it's really the emergence of the 49ers and what they've been able to do in that division, as well as the MVP type of season that Russell Wilson is on at this present moment, is the reason why I have the Rams being the most troubling out of these three. I think that the Cowboys necessarily only have to worry about Philly, and I feel like they're going to get their act together this week. They have a big important game this week. I don't necessarily see them winning this game, but I see their performance to be at a high level this week in order to compete for this division. And I just think that, you know, not every team is going to be able to come in and just run the ball, you know, all day against the Chiefs. I think the Colts had an opportunity. They have a really good running game. They have a very good offensive line. They have opportunities to get Marlon Mack rolling, as well as the Texans, man, with their improvement of their offensive line. The offensive line play is what really beat up on the Chiefs. And so I think that, you know, obviously moving forward, there's not going to be necessarily teams that can run the ball as efficient as the previous two teams, but their offense is going to continue to gain traction to get better. They obviously, you know, with the addition of Tariq Hill coming back, you've seen the impact he had already. And so I just think that the Rams, out of these three teams, have the most trouble at hand moving forward, just because of the other guys in their division are moving at a much higher pace than they are.
You make some valid points there, but I'm going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs as being the most troubling team. And it's also because of injuries. Now, I know every team in the NFL deals with injuries, but the Chiefs clearly are behind the eight ball, losing Chris Jones, their best defensive player, for the foreseeable future. There's really no timetable for his return with a groin strain. Those are soft tissue injuries. Xavier Williams, their nose tackle, is on IR due to high ankle sprain. And then I look at this offense, Jarrell. I mean, Patrick Mahomes has been hobbled with an ankle injury. You know, that's an injury that can linger for long periods of time. They started the season 4-0, right? They beat the Jags, the Raiders, the Ravens, and then the Lions. They squeaked by them on the road. But since then, they've been dominated in the trenches to the Colts, and then the same happened to them against the Texans on Sunday. There's a glaring hole on this Chiefs team. It's that run defense. You talked a little bit about it. They rank 28th in total defense, 30th against the run, giving up 162 yards per game. You cannot win long-term with that formula. I know that Patrick Mahomes, the guy, is sensational, but in the last 3 weeks, his completion percentage has plunged. He completed 72.3% of his passes through 4 weeks, And now he's just connected on just 57.1% against Detroit, 56.4% against Indianapolis, and 54.3% against Houston. So his numbers are going down, and that is not just on him, but it's on his offensive line. They're without Eric Fisher, their starting left tackle, who's dealing with a groin injury, and he underwent surgery. So who knows when he's going to return, but these defenses are starting to corral Mahomes in the pocket, knowing that he's not as mobile because of that ankle injury. And then offensively, whenever you go up against Kansas City, you just plow the ball right down their throats, and they cannot stop you. You got Frank Clark, who they acquired for a couple of first-round picks from Seattle and gave him a mega deal. He's been Casper this season. He's disappeared. He hasn't really done much for Kansas City. They're committing a heavy amount of penalties. It's just unraveling in a bad way for Kansas City. I know you talked about Tyreek Hill's return, and we all know the dynamic receiver he is. But this defense, Jarrell, is going to be their Achilles heel again. And let's not discount the Oakland Raiders, who are at 3-2 and are breathing on the Chiefs next right now. You know, Kansas City's on a short week going up to Denver, Mile High, a team that's playing better. And I wouldn't put it past Denver to pull the upset. So that's not even a guaranteed win for the Chiefs. So I see this sliding a little bit further, and I think that is certainly concerning for the Kansas City Chiefs right now.
Yeah, it's definitely an alarming situation, man, when you're thinking about how horrific their defense has been. But I still believe in the playmakers that they have in their stable. I mean, they're solidified in the safety position with the Honey Badger back there. I think that Frank Clark is going to start to catch his stride, man. He's a player that's always never folded when the pressure's on, and I think he's going to have opportunities upcoming, especially this week against Denver. They haven't really protected Flacco well. He didn't really necessarily play well last week. They played well defensively, and they had opportunities to rush in the football. But I think there's going to be opportunities there in order to beat this Denver team upcoming. And I never want to bet against Andy Reid, man, a guy that's been through the fire through and through, and he's been have opportunities to have shuffle lineups. As long as you have an opportunity to give Andy Reid a spectacular quarterback and a couple guys on the outside, I think he'll make his game plan offensively work to be centered around a defense that's been struggling. And so I think you'll start to see LeSean McCoy have opportunities to get more touches, getting the ball on the edges with Tariq Hill and more quick passing situations. You know, obviously Patrick Mahomes has been taking some hits, and you can tell once, you know, when he played against Indianapolis and he was down at his own end zone coming out, and he got his ankle rolled up and making a completion. You could tell that it, ever since then, it's been an horrific situation for him and his mobility. And so I think you take the time, yeah, you find a way to get him healthy, you find a way to get the ball out a lot faster instead of those 5 to 7 step drops that he's accustomed to. And I think this team has an opportunity to still get it rolling, man. I just don't necessarily want to bet against Andy Reid and having so much firepower, because even if, you know, their defense is horrific, man, this offense still has opportunity to put up 40 plus points per game. We've seen that before. And so they have all the playmakers in their stable in order to do so. And so I think that I don't necessarily want to give up on this Kansas City Chiefs team just yet.
All right. Well, you're going with the Rams is the most troubling. I have the Chiefs. Let's get into a fact fiction, a statement or two here before we get into week 7 picks. So the first statement is, and this made news last night, it became official, the Tennessee Titans made the right decision by pulling the plug on Marcus Mariota and naming Ryan Tannehill the starting quarterback for week number 7. Is that a fact or fiction for you?
I think it's fiction, man. I think I don't think they should necessarily give up on Marcus Mariota just yet. I mean, when you look at the pieces that have moved from his stable, man, his offensive line has been they've been shuffled around a lot to where they've been limited a lot this year. Derrick Henry hasn't been doing well offensively as far as rushing the football, and so, you know, they have to have more playmakers offensively other than AJ Brown. I just don't think that Ryan Tannehill is the solution in order to get this offense rolling. As you can see last week, he didn't even throw for over 250 yards, man. There was opportunities there for them to be successful, and they still lost. And so, they have the same career winning percentage of 47%. Neither one of those guys have been spectacular, but I just think if I'm taking a guy like Marcus Mariota compared to a guy like Ryan Tannehill. One guy's been to the playoffs. One guy's had an opportunity to be successful. And the other guy has shown me that time and time again, he's injury prone, and even with the playmakers that he has around him, he can't get the offense over the hump. And so I want a guy that's mobile, that guy can make swift decisions. And I think Marcus Mariota is a little bit better than that than Ryan Tannehill. And so I would have to say this is fiction.
I'm going to agree with you. I say that's fiction. I don't think it's fair what they did to Marcus Mariota. I know he struggled. He went 7 of 18 for 63 yards with two interceptions. But he also has been sacked 25 times this season, Jarrell. 25 times. The guy has not had a clean pocket to throw out of. And you know what? A lot of people don't talk about this, but Mariota has had three offensive coordinators up to this point in his career. How can you even give fair criticism on a guy like Mariota who's been having to learn new systems every single season? It was Matt LaFleur last year. Now it's Arthur Smith this year. Mike Mularkey was calling the plays for a year, and the Titans just were unable to get their offense going. I get it. Marcus Mariota, he's missed open receivers down the field. He's been very conservative for the most part of his career. But if you're the Titans right now, I know you're in desperation mode. You're 2-4. Your backs are against the wall. You have a good defense. You're looking for a jolt of energy on offense. But Ryan Tannehill, if I remember correctly, isn't the most strong quarterback as far as what he's done in his career. He's been solid. I'd say he's been average. So if you're expecting Ryan Tannehill to check into the lineup and be some extravagant upgrade over Marcus Mariota, I think you're naive and you're wrong for believing that. And I do think the Titans, they are wrong in making him the starter. They should have stuck with Mariota. He's on his final year of his deal anyways, so might as well see if he can improve and how he can handle adversity this upcoming week. And they're playing the Chargers, who have been struggling as well, so this could have been a game for Mariota to get back on his feet, get that run game going with Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis. But it's unjust, I think, what Tennessee has done with Mariota. I think he deserves some more opportunities. And for that reason, I agree with you. I say that the Titans made a bold move, but I don't think it was the right one.
Yeah, Isaac, it's just, you know, very sad to see, you know, these type of organizations, you know, when things don't start to go well, they're so quick to make a change. You know, they'll give a coach like, you know, Mularkey. He had several opportunities there at the coach before stepping down, and them hiring Mike Vrabel. I think that, you know, obviously, I think Vrabel's the right coach, and you know, for this team, their defense hasn't been playing shabby at all. I just think that offensively, man, they have to, you know, get stout up front. You know, obviously, their left tackle's been in and out the lineup. Quentin Spain being in Buffalo now, that hurts their offensive line as well. And you can see the impact that he's having out there in Buffalo and what they've been able to do offensively. And so you need guys up front, man, to be able to, if you want to establish yourself as a bully type of team, and you want to be a guy, you want to be guys that that are known to you know, handle their business up front, then you have to have the personnel to do so. And I just think that it starts up front, and that's what continues to give Marcus Mariota the confidence that they need in order to be successful. And I just wouldn't really give up on a guy like that just yet, man, because he's been proven to have some success when you have the right system around him. And I've never necessarily seen that with Ryan Tannehill, even with having the same coordinator a year in, a year out situation. And so I just think that they made the wrong move there.
And I'm not saying that Mariota is their long-term future. Obviously, there are some questions there, and I think a lot of Titans fans are ready for a change, and they're hoping that they can identify a young signal caller that can elevate their franchise to the level that a Super Bowl caliber level. But at the same time, you know, right now you're already entering week 7. I say you should have stuck with Mariota. First off, fix your offensive line protection. Then you come to a quarterback decision, because, yeah, you can have Tannehill out there who's pretty mobile himself, but I just don't see that there's going to be a big-time uptick in offensive efficiency with Ryan Tannehill under center. But that's just our takes on it. Now, for the sake of time, we're going to go ahead and jump into our Week 7 picks, Jarrell, as we always do every week on the Pro Football Chase podcast. And so the first game is Thursday Night Football. It's the 4-2 Chiefs at the 2-4 Broncos. The Broncos have won their last two games. This is at Mile High. Who do you have winning this one?
I'm personally taking Kansas City, man. I think they've been knocking them off over the last couple weeks. I think that the guys in the locker room, they're tired of hearing about that this defense can't stop anybody. I know that a guy like Frank Clark doesn't necessarily like all the bad mouth that you guys are getting. But like I said, man, I mean, obviously with the absence of Chris Jones, they're going to have to improve. But I just think that, you know, I don't think that Denver has enough firepower. You know, offensively, I know they have a solid running game with Phillip Lindsay. I just think that Kansas City is going to have opportunities to win this game, especially coming off a short week. So I have them winning 24-17.
This game's going to be very, very close. And I'm going to roll with Denver. I think they're going to get the upset at home. And here's why. I talked about the Chiefs' defense. They're ranked 30th overall, and they've struggled to stop the run, and that's the very reason why I'm picking the Broncos to win. They got Phillip Lindsay. They got Royce Freeman. Joe Flacco's throwing the ball pretty well. Emmanuel Sanders is looking healthy. He should be available to play. I think Denver, if they can replicate what Indianapolis and what Houston did, which is dominate the time of possession, going up against a KC defensive front that they're beaten down, they're injury plagued, they're without two of their interior starters, and I think they're going to run the rock right at the Chiefs yet again. Chris Harris Jr., one of the best corners in the game. He's already shut down Keenan Allen. Look for him to travel with Tyreek Hill. Travis Kelce's been a little quiet, so maybe a big day for him. But they fall short, and they lose their third straight game. Give me the Broncos 24-20 over the Chiefs on Thursday Night Football. That's an upset pick. Isaac special right there. I don't know if Jarrell, I don't know if you got your upset special of the week, but this is mine. I'm rolling with the Broncos and Vic Fangio's squad.
I like it, man. I think that it's a legitimate argument, especially with everything that Kansas City's been having to go through over the past few weeks. I just necessarily never want to bet against Big Red, man. I know that, you know, when his back's against the wall, that's when he becomes the most creative. And I think that, you know, this Thursday is going to be the same test, man. And I think Patrick Mahomes, just like he said earlier in the year, man, we don't have to do anything but be ourselves, and that's good enough. And so I think if the Kansas City Chiefs have opportunities to be themselves, the normal Kansas City Chiefs, then I think they're going to run away with a win.
Next game here got the 0-5 Dolphins, who, by the way, head coach Brian Flores has just announced that Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to be starting after he committed to Josh Rosen for the rest of the season. He's been waffling back and forth, obviously. So now he's going back to Fitzmagic, who's a former teammate of yours, Jarrell. He's going to go play one of his many former teams in the Buffalo Bills. The Bills are coming off a bye week, 4-1. I interviewed Jordan Phillips, a DT there. They got good energy going on there. Bills Mafia is fired up. I have the Bills winning in a monster blowout, 31-10 over the Dolphins. Who are you taking?
I'm going with the Bills Mafia. Like, there's no way I'm betting against the Bills this week, especially with Miami and what they're trying to do as far as tanking for Tua, man. I think that it's the worst thing in football. I think it's the worst thing ever because it never necessarily works out the way that you expect it. In fact, and Fitzpatrick being such a great guy, a great teammate that I remember, man, it's tough seeing him. It's fun watching him compete still, but it's tough seeing him go through that type of slide that they're going through, man. So I definitely have the Bills dominating in this one. I have them winning a score of 26-3, and I just have them continuing their dominance, moving to 5-1 and trying to keep up with the Patriots in that division.
Jaguars at Bengals. Gardner Minshew struggled a little bit going up against that feisty Saints defense last week. Jacksonville 2-4. Bengals 0-6. Zach Taylor has not gotten his first win as a head coach. Do they get it here at home, Jarrell? What say you?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I see you. I see you.
I'm going with Jacksonville, man. I think Gardner Minshew, he had an off week last week, and he had an opportunity. He had an opportunity to really do some great things. But I think that they're going to run into the Cincinnati Bengals, man, and they're going to go in there on a high note. Their defense is going to play well, and they're going to be able to run the football, man. So I have them winning a score of 20-9. I think that Jacksonville is going to run the ball a lot, and Gardner Minshew is going to shine.
I, too, am going with the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Bengals have just been atrocious on defense. And to make matters worse, they're going to be without Dre Kirkpatrick and William Jackson, two of their starting corners. Now, they may be able to get your boy Darquez Dennard back in the lineup because he's returning to practice. He's been on the PUP list, so that could help. But the Jaguars, I like Gardner Minshew to come in, light it up yet again. They'll control the time of possession with Leonard Fournette, who's been a little bit rejuvenated the last couple of weeks. Give me the Jaguars 27-13 over the Cincinnati Bengals. Here's the next game here. The 4-2 Vikings going to Detroit to take on the Lions, who suffered a pretty nauseating loss in Green Bay due to Aaron Rodgers, his stellar performance, and then on top of those blown calls. They're back at home taking on a hot Vikings team and Kirk Cousins. Who takes this NFC North battle?
I personally would go with Minnesota. I think that what they were able to do last week against a juggernaut like Philadelphia and the continuity that they have defensively, for them to go out there and finally get Stephon Diggs and Kirk Cousins on the same page. And I mean, and what a show it looks, and what great of a show it looks, man, when those two are on the same page. And so I personally have Minnesota winning in a tight one, 28-24. I think Matthew Stafford's going to battle, but I think Detroit exerted a lot of energy last week against Green Bay, as well as exerting a lot of energy this week and talking about the referee situation. I think Matt Patricia's a guy in order to keep them focused, but I think Minnesota's starting to get things cooking, man, and I like Minnesota in a score of 28-24.
I'm going to take the Detroit Lions to win this one at home, 23-20. I like what the Vikings are coming off. A strong week, Kirk Cousins, that air attack, getting back into form. But the Lions, they're a darn good team. Their defense is playing very well under Matt Patricia, Trey Flowers, and Justin Coleman. Darius Big Play Slay. I think that defense is the deciding factor. They win by a field goal, 23-20 over the Vikes. Now, the next game here, 3-2 Raiders coming out of a bye at Lambeau Field to take on the Green Bay Packers, who are 5-1. I mean, I already know who you're going to go with, right? So why ask you? But who are you going to take here?
Okay, so look, man, this actually was a tough game for me to choose because John Gruden coming off a bye week, I think that he's going to have a lot of tricks up his sleeve as far as this Green Bay team, and he's going to have a really good formula as far as keeping the ball out of the hands of Aaron Rodgers. Obviously they're going to run the ball with Jacobs, so I expect him to get, 25 to 30 carries in order to keep, their offense off the field. But I think it's going to be a lot closer game than what people actually entail. I just think that Mason Crosby is going to have to come up big again this week, minus the referees. And I think that the Packers are going to win in a score. 21-20 is going to be a game-winning field goal, just like it was last week. And the Packers continue their role at home and they continue to impress.
I'm sensing another upset here, and I'm going with the Raiders to beat the Green Bay Packers on the road. You talked about it right now, Jarrell. Oakland, their DNA is to smash people on the ground with that offensive line. That's getting Gabe Jackson back in the lineup, an all-pro offensive guard who's been out with a torn MCL since training camp. And I'd like for Oakland to go in there, play some smash-mouth football, force the Packers to stop the run, because let me tell you, I was very taken aback by how physical Oakland was up front against that Bears defense. They beat them to a pulp. They rushed for over 150 yards, and I look for them to do the same at Lambeau Field. Look for Derek Carr to be that game manager as he's been, and ultimately I give the Raiders a very tight victory, 26-24 over the Packers. This Oakland team is motivated. They're full of young players. They're hungry, so give me the Raiders in this one over the Packers, who have been one of the better teams in the NFL up to this point. But let's go to the next game here, Jarrell. 3-3 Rams at the 1-5 Falcons. I still cannot believe that Atlanta is this bad considering the talent they have. Who do you have winning this one?
I got the Rams coming in and dominating this game. I think they're going to win in a score of 31-14. I think the Rams get back on track. I think the Rams is going to travel with Julio everywhere he goes, which is going to limit this Atlanta offense. And I just think that, you know, defensively they're already atrocious, so they might as well start to turn it in, man. Even though they haven't really lost division games yet, they have opportunities in that regard. They've gotten off to a terrible start, so I'm going to go with L.A.
Not so fast, as Lee Corso says on College Game Day. I'm going with the Falcons, man. I think this offense at home, I know this defense has been absolutely treacherous. I mean, don't even get me wrong, but so have the Rams. The Rams, they've been horrible defensively as well. I mean, Jameis Winston hung up over 50 points on their home turf a couple of weeks ago. Now, I know they got Jalen Ramsey there. Who knows if he's going to play, and if he does, he may be on a snap count. I don't know. But if he goes head-to-head against Julio, that's going to be must-see TV. But give me the Falcons, 34-30. I think they find a way to get this offense going as it's been going, especially last week. I mean, they moved the ball very well against Arizona. Unfortunately, Matt Bryant, the 40-plus-year-old kicker, missed a field goal to force overtime. But I do like the Falcons in this one. Next game, Texans at Colts. This is going to be one of the best games of this week. We get to see who's going to be first in the division. Jarrell, are you taking the visiting Texans, or are you taking Indianapolis coming out of a bye?
So Indianapolis is coming out of a bye at home. I'm going to take Indianapolis 20-17, a very great game, close game. I think it's going to be exciting on both ends. But I just like what Indianapolis is doing. If they have any opportunity to get Booker back at any point in time, before the game, that would be phenomenal. But the way that they've been playing offensively and defensively, man, they have the formula in order to make a push for the playoffs. And so I'm having Indianapolis winning 20-17 at home.
Yeah, I got the Colts too. I have them beating the Texans 28-23. And plus they get Darius Leonard back, who is out with a concussion, as well as Clayton Gathers, their starting safety. So some reinforcements for Matt Eberflus's defense. Next game here, we got the unbeaten Niners going to D.C. to take on the 1-5 Redskins. I have the 49ers taking this one 20-3 in a dominant defensive performance yet again. Jimmy G in that offense, they'll kind of just manage the game. They'll score late, and it'll be out of the Redskins' hands pretty much all game long. So I think the Niners get another thumping victory over Washington.
Yes, I have San Fran dominating this game 40-10. It would be really great to see Adrian Peterson go for 100 yards, but I definitely don't think he's even going to go for over 50 yards against this defensive line. San Francisco's moving on all cylinders right now, man. They continue to get better week in and week out. And I think they're just going to add gas to their fire right again this week with a dominating win over Washington.
All right, we'll pick up the tempo a little bit till we get to the Sunday night, Monday night games. Cardinals at Giants. I have the Cardinals going into MetLife winning 31-23. Kyler Murray is putting up some big-time numbers. Saquon Barkley's status is in question. We're not sure with him. But I think Arizona, they're finding a little groove. So I'll take them 31-23.
Yeah, I too have Arizona winning in a score of 27-18 over the Giants.
All right, Chargers at Titans, 2-4, 2-4 teams. We got Ryan Tannehill starting for Tennessee. I actually have the Chargers going in to win this game in a very low-scoring affair, 17-13.
I'm going to stop you right there. I think that the Titans at home are going to be a much-proven team this week. Even with Tannehill being the quarterback, I still think they're going to have the formula up front in order to beat this Chargers team, which hasn't looked good at all offensively. And so I'm going to take Tennessee in a really close game, 18-15 over the Chargers.
All right, Saints at the Bears. This will be a 4:25 p.m. Eastern time start. Bears coming off a bye week. Mitchell Trubisky should be back in the lineup. I actually like the Bears to come out to stop Teddy Bridgewater. Alvin Kamara is dealing with a high ankle sprain, so he may not be able to play. Give me the Bears at home, 23-10.
Yeah, I too have the Bears winning. I think Mitchell Trubisky coming back in the lineup is going to help them a lot, even though I have a lot of faith in Chase Daniels. But I think this defense getting rested up over a bye is going to be dominant. So I have them winning in a score of 27-17 over New Orleans.
4-2 Ravens at the 5-1 Seahawks. Earl Thomas goes back to Seattle, a place where he's played his entire career. And let's remember, Jarrell, remember when Earl Thomas gave Pete Carroll the bird after he suffered that injury? So now they'll meet face-to-face in Seattle. I like the Seahawks to win this one in a tight game, 24-21. Russell Wilson is the clear-cut favorite for MVP with the way he's playing right now. He's the difference, but it should be a very entertaining game.
Yeah, man, I actually think that Baltimore is going to come in and beat Seattle. I like Earl Thomas being back there to go hand-in-hand versus Russell Wilson. He knows all his tendencies and knows, you know, what he likes and what he doesn't like. And vice versa in Russell Wilson. But I just think that Lamar Jackson is really the X factor for this one. And so I have them going up winning in a close game, 20-17 for Justin Tucker field goal at the end.
By the way, I'm not sure why the NFL hasn't flexed that one up to Sunday Night Football and moved down the Eagles and Cowboys considering the circumstances. But we're on that game next. Eagles 3-3, Cowboys 3-3, the battle of first place, NFC East, 8:20 p.m. Eastern time. I have the Philadelphia Eagles winning this game, Jarrell. I've been telling you all week via text, I think the Eagles are going to come in. I know Doug Peterson even guaranteed a victory, even though he walked back on his comments. This is a more motivated team. The Cowboys, they've looked lackluster the last couple of weeks. Their head coach is more focused on clapping instead of winning games. And so horrible. I think the Eagles are going to go into Jerry World. They're going to grind out on the ground against that struggling Dallas run defense. Give me the Eagles, as painful as it is to say, 29-17. And mind you, number 10 for Philly may be back, DeSean Jackson. And if he is, that's going to be bad news for a leaky Cowboys secondary.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm going with the Dream Chasers. I'm going with Philadelphia.
Get out of here with the Dream Chasers.
And an impressive victory, I'm telling you. I'm going with the impressive victory out there. I think that they're going to come in, raring to make a statement this week. I think they overlooked Minnesota Vikings last week and their capabilities. And, you know, obviously we talked with Brandon Graham about that stuff and how important that stuff was last week. So I think that the Philadelphia Eagles are going to be raring to get some payback this week, and especially against a division opponent. If they have an opportunity to get DeSean Jackson back, then I'm definitely rolling with Philly. But I think it's going to be a shootout, man. I think that the Philadelphia Eagles win 34-28. I think that it's still going to be a shootout. I think they're going to have a game plan offensively in Dallas in order to score some points. And I think it's always going to be an exciting game.
And if Philly pulls it out, as we both expect, maybe next Wednesday I'll be here pretty joyful knowing that Garrett has been fired, but who knows? We'll see. We'll see what happens, man. I really hope for the best, obviously, but this Eagles team, they always somehow have a knack for going into Dallas and playing them tough, so I'm going to give them the victory by 12. So the final game here of the Week 7 slate, the undefeated New England Patriots going to take on Sam Darnold and the Jets, fresh off a victory. My gosh, it still stings, but it's all good. 8:15 p.m. Eastern time, Monday Night Football. You know, the Jets are getting healthier. C.J. Mosley could be back, who's a big part of that defense. But in the end, I don't think it matters. Give me the Patriots, 30-17. Tom Brady will go in there. He'll make his magic. But it's this defense in New England. They're number one in the NFL. Stephon Gilmore, Jamie Collins, the resurgence he's had on defense. Those guys will make some big-time plays that give the Patriots a victory.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you, man. I think that the Patriots are going to dominate against the Jets. It was nice to see them come out and have some success last week at home, especially against a Dallas team that everybody loves.
No, but, it was not nice to see, but go on.
But, man, I'm taking New England in a dominating fashion again. I think that their defense is going to be dominant again, and so I have them winning 34-10. And just dominating and beating up on the Jets, man, especially with the Jets wanting to move so many different playmakers on their team right now. Everybody's up on the trading block. I just don't think that the Jets have the right formula in order to beat the Patriots.
All right. Well, there you have it. There's our Week 7 podcast. Now, we were unable to answer fan questions this week. We're a little bit tight on time, but that's something that we're going to pick back up next week. We always like to interact with fans. Sorry for that, not having that available this week, but we'll look forward to it next week. Until then, we're going to have some good football this weekend. Looking forward to some matchups. We'll be right back here next Wednesday to talk all things NFL. So, Jarrell, thanks again for your time, man. Looking forward to another week next week.
Man, absolutely, man. Thank you again, Isaac, for having me on the show, man. It's always a pleasure to be able to discuss, the NFL and things week to week. A lot of topics and to be able to give our troops about a lot of things, man. So I think it's always important, and I'm excited again next week. Stack up this week on your fan questions. Gain a lot of traction. Really think wholeheartedly about what you guys want to ask us, so we can have an opportunity to answer as many as we can next week.
Yes, sir. You heard Jarrell, so take note. Looking forward to it. Have a great rest of the day, man. Take care and God bless.
All right, now.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.